wife and I have been watching a cop show that we wanted to do. Maybe we'll talk about it in that one section, but I'd be a shit cop. Like, I can't remember anyone's. Even the shows, I'm like, wait, who are they talking about? She's like, that one guy that did the one thing. And I'm like, oh, what was his name again? Like, that they just said it.
Yeah.
We are like that old married couple.
What's he say?
Getting used to it, getting a breath in. What are you guys talking about?
What are you guys talking about?
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of What Are You Guys Talking About? We are kind of doing a bit of a spacer here. We were going to have Mitch on now, but Mitch wanted to do like a post show. So we're going to watch La Habitación de Fermat. I have to watch another movie after I get back from Fright Fest. And then we're going to talk with Mitch, who we have lots of cool things to say about Mitch. Yes, but the biggest thing that you should all know is I'm getting someone who's actually been mentioned now in Variety. So
ooh.
Ha, 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 everybody. He's going on my show. I know. And then he will probably forget who we are. At any rate, welcome everybody. Today we are going to be talking about the show that came out of the blue, caught it on Disney Plus, which was funny to watch on Disney Plus because it was edited where I knew it wasn't edited before. But
oh, really?
We watched Atlanta.
Yes.
I don't think it was heavily edited, but when you go to the strip club, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay. I see.
So don't get an idea of what this show is about. We'll do first impressions for you, but there is a strip club scene where they did blurry out the whatever, and I just kind of laughed. So I was like, oh, come on, Disney Plus.
Disney.
Like, don't you can't you just put a rating on it and let it go?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So this is a show about, kind of about Atlanta. And first time I ever heard about it was my girl Z, who I hope to see at Fright Fest. Z, if you ever listen to my show, you are the coolest person in the world. But she's from Atlanta.
Mm.
And so she always told me to watch this thing. It was like, you really like it. I kind of dismissed it because I was like, I'm not from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, my family isn't from that region. So like,
right.
I don't know a whole lot about the place. So I was like, ah, if it's about Atlanta, I probably won't like it. And then, yeah, what did I catch it last week? And by the end of last week, I was like, okay, this is what we're doing. Literally watched, 24 episodes in a week. So that's what we're talking about today. But before we get too far, brass tacks, please remember to like, share, and subscribe, folks. It's the most important thing you can do for us. It helps us keep our listener base going, which is growing every week thanks to the lovely metrics that I see and thanks to all of you. So please get out there. There are lots of people that want to hear from filmmakers. Probably from us, maybe not, but at any rate, you help us out. So please just, you know, put any comments in there that you want to say. No one ever comments on our stuff. I love it. I'm so mouthy. I'm always expecting like a punch up. Do I intimidate people, you think?
I don't think so, no.
No, no. See, he's always brutally honest with me when he could just lie. I say, of course that's what it is, Jason. Of course that's what it is. So, if you want to check us out, though, webpage www.lovevictoriaproductions.com. That is the best place to see everything, including some of the amazing old shorts that we have worked on before. You can also check us out on Facebook, and where we have a company page, and we also have pages for myself and Edward. And then we also have Jazzy J. Shiro and Nano LVP on
Instagram.
Instagram, thank you. Why can't I remember the word for that? LVP Film Life on TikTok and a LinkedIn page for the company, which actually has 13 followers. Like, I just kind of discovered that, you know, you follow it and I follow it, but also like a couple of my old work buddies. So I was like, cheers to you guys. Thanks. Because that's a great way to stay up to date if you knew me from like my day job and you just didn't want to say. And then finally, Twitter, I'm outmouth love Victoria and always kind of vocal on Twitter about something. And then Ed is at Ananoski Prod, which is his old production company that I made him shut down in grievous fashion when we first started this company and have been trying to resurrect ever since.
It's also the nickname that my
Ananoski. Do you want to explain what that is? Because I always thought it was like a child thing, but no, you're like Peanut. That's like, you're like a Spanish peanut.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that a
peanut
compliment?
Peanut was given that name because obviously he's a very big guy.
Right.
But
this is Jason's stepfather.
That's my stepfather who just look on my Facebook page and you'll find out who that is.
He's a great character.
Yeah, he's a character. Yeah. You know, that's why he and I have always got along because he's a character like I am. So, but he was called Peanut because he's a big guy and he's a small guy. It's a joke in America, you know, you call him Peanut because it's a thing.
Right.
But Enano is kind of, like, that's the same kind of joke in Espanol.
Kind of. But it started because I'm the youngest of in my family.
Baby.
I'm the baby, yeah. And so my dad just started calling me Enano, which means tiny or little one.
Mm.
And then him and my brother started calling me Ananoski just because they thought it was funny that it was like Russian.
Yeah.
And it just stuck. It just stuck. My brother still to this day calls me that. And I think later in life, I kind of like I dug it, you know. I was like, oh, Enano, that's kind of a, it's kind of cool. It's almost like a hip-hop name, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I kind of stuck with it, and that's kind of what inspired the old company name and stuff.
This is why we need to, I'm always telling Ed, because we are bilingual. I mean, Ed much more than I am, but we're both well-versed in Spanish, and we don't hit the Spanish crowd up, our Spanish-speaking brethren up for filmmaking. So if any of you listening are Spanish speakers and have connections with Spanish filmmakers and say, oh, maybe you guys want to make a Spanish film, we would love to make a Spanish-speaking film. We haven't had the inclination yet because we haven't had the right kind of presentation for it. Keep in mind, we are working on a feature at the moment, so everything is kind of pushed to the back. But And it was funny, I was reading my Sid Field, I've just almost finished the screenwriting book, but there's so many helpful, the reason everybody should read that book is because there are chapters that are helpful if you're writing. Even if you're not going to be a screenwriter, which is what I want to do, but even if you're not going to be a screenwriter, like, you've got to understand that he knows, he's been through this all before, and he's horribly racist, which is hilarious. Usually I throw away the book, because the guy makes comments about, like, primitive this and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh my god, like, how this got past the woke crowd, I don't know. But he makes this comment about the cards, which I didn't know he was going to bring back the cards. Save the Cat, the best thing about Save the Cat is the beatboard and the cards. And so he has them too. And he says, this is the way that you make. I didn't know that everybody uses cards. Well, you can do other ways.
But a lot of people do, I think.
You know, I still remember that script supervisor we worked with. They're like, no, I've just done it on the computer. And the look I gave her was like, what happened to pen and paper? You know what I mean? Like, pen and paper is just fine. But listen, there's just so much insight in that book as to something that must be universal for screenwriters. One is the process of screenwriting and just how horrible it is on you and your family. Because I'm emotional like you wouldn't believe. I'm usually emotional, but God, when I'm writing, I'm three times as emotional. So Ed probably gets the brunt of it because that's who I call when I'm feeling really emotional. But my wife, my kid, you know, it's just, and it talks about all this. And it also has like a section about when to write. And like, I thought I was the only one that could only like squeeze in an hour here and there. And it was like, no, that's what it's like. Most and that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
So that's why 11 to 12 every day, I've been trying to sit down and kind of work through an hour every day on this, because that's the time I can find. So when I get home from this podcast, that will be what I do for an hour of just setting it all down. Anyways, I just encourage you to get it, because that type of stuff, if you're feeling like, you know, and I went through this with writing, and I'm sure everybody else does, but if you're feeling like you're not good enough on this, the comments he makes are not trite. They are true. He says, listen, you are supposed to feel that way. It's part of the process. It's a really weird thing that only writers know about. So,
and this is Sid Field screenwriting.
Right? Yeah, screenplay. It's the seminal screenwriting book next to Save the Cat. Save the Cat's the shorter one, the one that's more commercial.
I think it came out more recently as well.
Yeah, and people don't like this one as much because he's much more detailed. So instead of where Save the Cat will give you a quicker process to get you to the actual screenplay, he wants you to go and write about all your characters. And he wants like pages and pages and pages of background. I can't fault that because, listen, some of the times when we pick up on problems in other people's screenplays, it's exactly that. It's like you didn't think about what your character does. And I run into that problem when I'm writing, saying like, I don't actually know what this guy would do with this. It just came to me yesterday, and it was one of those revelating thoughts that the character I'm writing is not me. Usually that's what happens, and Ed can tell you that. They won't always be exactly like me, but they will have huge elements of myself into them. Well, the story I'm writing isn't really the way I would play it out. It's a different way, because it's just how it's funny. Again, the book would explain this, but it's how the events took place. Like, once I started putting the story together, it was like, well, this is how it will work. The character's my father.
Oh, interesting.
So at least personality-wise, closer to my father. My father and I are polar opposites, so or at least very different in personality. And when I started looking at all the different movements I was making him make and the way he was reacting to things, I was like, oh my god, this is how my dad would react. It's not me.
That's fascinating.
It is, right?
Talk about psychologists.
Psychology, right? Like, so this is the joy of it and the pain of it and the craziness of it, because like you just get to this point where you've reached something and then you're immediately distraught because you don't know what the next step is. So Sid Field's book will help you with that if you, you know, are inclinated to read it, and if you are, you know, a screenwriter struggling with those things. So that's part of, I guess that could be my this week. I mean, I did watch the new What If, which was
insane, good. But
we'll put that on your this week, just so I don't take up too much time.
Yeah, I got to watch the second episode of What If, which was what if T'Challa became Star-Lord, Cha-Cha, yes. And it was just great. I mean, honestly, above everything, it was, and spoilers, by the way,
if you haven't watched, huge spoilers, so turn it off for 5 minutes.
But when you see Thanos show up and the fact that T'Challa just kind of like,
what? It's just efficient. It's just efficient. I'm not. Why do you keep calling me Captain Genocide?
He talked him out of his like plan to kill half the universe, you know, which is more power to T'Challa. It was quite emotional as well, like hearing Chadwick Boseman, knowing that it was his last performance as this character as well.
It was dusty.
Although I think he's going to show up again later in the season.
Okay.
I think. There's one shot in the trailer that I've seen, which is the wraparound.
I'm a bit worried because Howard the Duck was in that one. So I was like, oh, I told you it was going to be a Howard the Duck episode. This might be it. That might have been your time with Howard.
But it was awesome.
Oh, it was amazing, right?
Yeah.
Right?
The little quack.
It just... Listen, Guardians of the Galaxy and Black Panther are two of my favorite of the two franchises, right?
Yeah, like, definitely.
You know, my daughter, the worst thing, I think she was telling me this morning, we woke it up, you know, we called him this morning, but my daughter was telling, I won't let her watch this one because she's such a fan of Guardians of the Galaxy and she hasn't seen Black Panther. And I said, you'll get half the story here. Like, watch Black Panther because I'm pretty sure she'll love it now. And I'm like, and then this will be like...
Oh, yeah, but she's going to love Shuri. And...
You know, like, swan songs, like, because that's what this is. And that's, I always have, sometimes I have a cynical thing to say about those. You know, I did when we talked about The Crow, you know, Heath Ledger as the Dark Knight. Like, I do feel, and it's not just you guys. Like, I'm not saying you, I'm saying all of us. Mm. All of us. We do a certain thing to these types of characters. The ones that die too young and they're in film.
Right.
It's because we can idolize them. Yeah, we can turn them into something. Like, I'm sure Chadwick was, like, the coolest dude in the world. Like, don't get me wrong, but... The thing is that now he's not here anymore. People will...
He's iconicized.
Yeah, and my only problem with that is the way that they're not treated like that in living. Yeah, like, if you really thought this guy was as amazing as you said, do you know the treatment he received even from his co-workers while he was going through cancer because they thought he was just a prince?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's all I'm saying. Like, that's why everybody, you know, including myself... You know, needs to remember not to judge a book by its cover. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because
give people the benefit of the
people
doubt.
Could not be here tomorrow, and then you'll miss them even more.
Very well said.
But yeah, man, wow, what a what if. And now, incredibly looking forward to the next one. Like, it just keeps building.
Yeah, tomorrow, right?
I think so.
Yeah, Wednesday.
I think so. So yeah.
Wednesday is the news Friday, according to Disney.
Yeah, that's right, man.
I also caught the end of Schmigadoon, this show that we've kind of been praising and loving.
Yeah, we talked about that on, was it Saturday or Sunday, you and I were talking about it. How are you? How were your feelings on Schmigadoon?
Yeah, it was a little bit disappointing in the end.
Okay.
It just felt a little bit flat. I think because they wrote themselves into a corner with the show, whereby... Yes, these people are trapped in this magical, musical land, but once they get out, that's it, right? And I'm not sure they really kind of thought much further than...
It's entirely possible, because I think the question does come the other way, of course, to end that would have been to leave it on a cliffhanger and to keep them in the town, because like you said, once you're out, at least as far as we know, you know, once you're out, it's over.
Right.
Who knows, like, how long this was meant to run for. You know, we talked about on Saturday, it was like, well, maybe, you know, Lorne Michaels just said, I only want six episodes.
Yeah, I want
a
season.
It's too hard to do... Because this is probably really difficult to get together with the production.
I think it was very much impulsed by Cecily Strong, who's the main actress in that.
Okay.
Who's been a cast member of SNL for a really long time.
Right.
And it was probably like her project. Look, I want to do this, you know. And then Lorne Michaels did his thing and he gets Barry Sonnenfeld and Michael Keegan Key.
Yeah,
and
built it out for the idea.
Yeah.
So, okay, I get that. Because, yeah, that was the only way to do it. Where you're not coming back for the second season.
Yeah,
and
like
so,
a one and done.
And I think that's exactly... If you're doing it a one and done, then yeah, you had a hell of a lot of things that... Just to satisfy an audience that you had to kind of wrap up, you know?
Because
unfortunately, a musical is not like a J-horror. You can't just leave elements like kind of unsound. Or you could, but people would be unsatisfied.
Yeah, your musical theater crowd are going to want a kind of... bow at the end.
A classical ending. Yeah.
And I think I will enjoy the ending more when I give it a full rewatch, which I'm sure I will. It's only six episodes. But I think I'll enjoy it almost like a long movie.
That's the only thing. I was just about to comment on that. This is the weird thing that's coming about from streaming wars. I just like saying it like that because it's fucking...
Streaming wars.
It's just ridiculous, you know, but streaming wars. Because you're finding out different preferences for things and it always... It does depend on the show, doesn't it? Like... so many shows we've said, like, no, like, has to be done episodically. Right. It's so much better. Ted Lasso, this week's episode.
I haven't watched it yet.
No, I won't. But, you know, again, episode by episode, it's just fun. 30 minutes with the wife. Yeah, like, we love that show.
And it, waiting for the next episode.
It always makes
right?
you feel better at the end of it. And that's kind of the design of the show. But, yeah, this one, like, I honestly, could have taken the whole thing in one chunk. And it being one long musical journey, you know, through this place and then back again. Almost like the last time we said that was kind of talking about everything HBO does, I always see as like a really long movie. You know what I mean? Like Watchmen, really long movie. Lovecraft Country, really long movie. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it they can be episodic, but they're done better kind of thinking them in one. They're bingeable.
Yeah, exactly. Which is very interesting, I think, for this show, because obviously there's two seasons of Atlanta out, and they've commissioned two more, three and four.
Yeah, three's just come out of production, so it's slated for early 2022.
They were shooting in London in April.
Oh, if we'd known, right?
Oh, Paperboy. But it's going to be really interesting to see this, like, amazing show that they did pre-pandemic and then kind of a post-pandemic world, you know?
Well, see, this is the thing I loved about this show, because this show was ahead of its time. Okay, right now, we are seeing loads of sitcoms, Mythic Quest, Ted Lasso, vary themselves. And so what that means is, instead of having like an arc, like a Park and Recreations arc or a Superstore arc, where it's literally the same characters doing the same thing every time, the characters don't do the same thing every time.
They and throw fact, you curveballs.
Curveballs, yeah. New characters, sometimes complete one-off stories. I like that. I think it's adding a whole lot to the comedy mix, saying, but this came about back when nobody else was doing that.
2016
and 2017. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't believe that when I saw it, but then I remember it's Donald Glover. So, again, we have to shout out, and this is the whole reason I think the show works. You know, this guy is got the Midas touch, and it's not because he's famous. It's because he's hyper-talented. And he surrounds himself, I say that, he surrounds himself with hyper-talented people. Okay, this guy was the guy from Community, okay, where I fell in love with his character, which is completely not like him from what I know from reading about his own interviews and stuff like that. It was this really dumb jock, which is the opposite of kind of the way he's like a sensitive boy
us. He considers himself a nerd.
So like having him play that immediately, I was like, I don't like this guy, and he's hilarious in Community. Plays really well off that
so
vibe.
Good. I first kind of came across him through Community, definitely. And I just kind of became a fan of his because I read that he had been a staff writer at 23 for Tina Fey on 30 Rock. And that also really surprised me about the show, because this show, it feels really real and very like normal people's lives. But this kid from the age of 23 was writing for, you know, 30 Rock.
But
it's interesting.
And this, maybe this is why I like the show now, because I'm going through the writing process. As you know, Ed is walking with me through this grueling process. And it's really, for me, the first time. I've done plenty of shorts, and people have always been impressed with the fact that I can sit down, churn out a short in usually a week or two, got an idea. But this is tough, because this is a lot longer. It has to be, this is going to be like the one feature I get to make in the next 3 to 5 years. So it's got to be good. You know what I mean? And so you just put more into it. And the problem is, your writing is only as good as your honesty to yourself. That is where I think writing falls apart for most people, including myself, guys. Donald Glover is just one of those people that understands himself really well. And you could see it. Atlanta, I think, is the best example of that. But listen to his stuff on Childish Gambino. He a lot of times is rapping about his life, about how ridiculous things are in his own way. And he's able to do that in such a metaphorical way sometimes. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying this guy is the Midas touch because he's famous, okay? That is one reason that I'm sure he's continued to have success. But he's got the Midas touch because he's talented. This is what we're talking about when we say talent. He understands how to write. He understands how to talk about things that we all want to hear.
And he works with his brother, which I kind
of
like.
Exactly. Cool, yeah. So Stephen Glover, the writer on a lot of his stuff. But mm-hmm. he had, in that second season, I noticed he started picking some other people as well to do the writing. And every time, it was another really good story. Wow. You know, just like we saw with, as I said, going back to Mythic Quest, where they started figuring that out.
Yeah, you know
what I mean? And I think, you know, this is because I'm still watching It's Always Sunny, and I'm way behind everyone else on this, because there's way too many episodes.
There's like 14 seasons.
I can imagine the people on that show never want to see it again. You know, like, I'm so sick of making It Sunny. But I just watched an It's Sunny episode that was directed by Fred Savage.
Yeah. He directs a lot of them.
Yeah. I was like, that's brilliant. Like, another guy to the mix. It's surrounding yourself with talented. Fred Savage, if you don't know, you know, Ben Savage and Fred Savage are both very talented guys. Mm. Like, you don't always see their talent. You saw it on screen when they were actors, but behind the scenes, these guys are known for their ability to churn out good stuff.
Princess Bride, was it The Wonderful Years?
The Wonder Years. Careful. Yeah. We had Americans listening, and we love that show. That was like... That's really
popular in Spain as well.
Oh, man, you sat down with your mom and dad every week to watch that one. You know what I mean? Winnie, man.
Everybody loved Winnie. It's funny because he hasn't changed much.
Facially, no. Yeah. He's one of those guys that age that way, you know.
Yeah.
I always think, like, Jared Leto and is, like, the best example of that, a man who hasn't aged in, what, 30 years. But he still actually looks a little... Ben Savage actually looks, you know, more like a kid.
Yeah.
So... Okay, so moving back to Atlanta, why did we want to talk specifically about Atlanta, though, not just Donald Glover? Well, Atlanta is one of those, as I said, it's ahead of its time, but it's also, I think, a great example of how comedy modernizes itself. Mm. By keeping, the thing that Ed told me about it before we watched, he says, listen, what you're going to like is that there's an element of honesty to this. There's an element where the comedy ends and it becomes real life.
Yeah.
And I told him I was actually quite opposed to that, because in England, that's been done a couple times much to my not happiness, by Peter Kay. Peter Kay likes to write comedy like that.
Mm.
And I just don't think, no, Peter, I love your comedy, but I like it when you keep it funny. I don't find your, like, trips to reality ever to be, like, appropriate. And that's not because I don't acknowledge the bad things that can happen. It's just, it never feels like the right time to be saying what he's saying. So, you know, spoilers. For example, there's a show called Carpooling where he had, you know, he has basically this romance with this carpooler for 5 episodes, and he abruptly, and I mean abruptly, ended that relationship at the end of the 5th episode. Like, the ending is that they just don't talk to each other anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't know why I just went on the journey with you for 5 episodes to learn about this other person that your character is falling in love with, but I certainly don't understand the... And he's just trying to do it real to life. Yeah.
I think in defense of Peter Kay, I think it's a really tough balancing act to inject some reality and some truth into comedy. But when it's done well, like it's done in Atlanta, oh boy, is it like...
That's right. And both moving. Points, I mean, both people could fly back at me, Donald Glover or Peter Kay, because the whole point that they would make is, this is my story I'm telling.
So, fair enough, yeah.
And that's Peter Kay saying that. I didn't want to end it with a happy ending. Mm. This is what I thought it should be, because this is coming from some point in my life or some point in my writing.
Mm.
So I understand that. I just, again, the producer in me is like...
It didn't hit you in the
right spot. But for the fans, because we've watched Peter Kay in England... he sells out his tours, but his TV stuff has become less and less and less over the years.
It must be hard to kind of, and I think this is another reason why I really respect Donald Glover, but it must be hard to find success doing something and then to be told over and over again, just keep doing that. Keep doing that. You're going to make so much money. It's going to be great.
Right.
People are going to love you.
Actually, he's a great example of that, right? Because he's like, nah, I'm going to do something different now.
And I think as an artist, for your own sanity, for your own kind of... to maintain the passion, for it not to become this, like, just job that you fucking hate. I think sometimes you do need to kind of make tough decisions, and they're not always going to work out. I mean, I always respect it when people kind of go with something, you know?
Well, that's because we're artists. And we know at the end of the day, listen, man, the money is a ruse. Like, it's a complete ruse. Now, don't get me wrong. Not having monetary problems, you know, is no joke. And we're not trying to say we don't want to be rich someday. And we wouldn't totally appreciate not having to worry about money anymore. But when you get to a point that, I guess, Donald Glover or Peter Kay and those people are in, like, you know, if you could live off of what you've got... then make your own decisions. You know what I mean? If that means you can't buy your $5 million mansion, then yeah, we would, you know, kind of applaud that. So I think sometimes where I don't applaud is I read a Yahoo article. That'll tell you right off the bat that it was a bad idea. But I do read Yahoo every day because it's my US news, CNN and US Yahoo. One, CNN gives you like the official news and then US Yahoo is like the gossip rag. But some like there was this thing that was applauding. I think it was on Scary Mommy. So this is why I probably didn't like the article. But it was applauding Cameron Diaz's decision to retire at 40. And I was like, as much as I agree, sure, it's like, I'm not applauding that decision. She probably just looked at the mountain of money she has made in the past 20 years and said, man, I don't have to work anymore. Yeah. Like, that's all I'm saying. Nice is like, problem to have. Sometimes when we twist this in celebrity discussions, I'm like, all right, Donald Glover, in my mind, isn't necessarily there because he's younger. It's like, you know, he may...
He's 1 year younger than I am.
Really? So he's 37?
37.
Oh my goodness. So he isn't that young then. So he could turn around and do one of these I'm not working anymore. And I just think...
Could do.
I'm perfectly okay with that. I'm just, as I said, in this particular article, was talking about how great it was for Cameron Diaz and how you can totally respect that and blah, blah, blah. And that's why I was saying, Donald Glover making decisions on his career, sure. Retiring completely, I'm like, I don't applaud it. It just happens. Like,
yeah. I mean, I think he's probably going to struggle more with... He's got so many kind of fingers and so many pies that, like, you know, how can you maintain a Grammy Award winning rap career along with
the,
film starring
this
career?
Was the good parts about what they were talking about with Cameron Diaz when she said, like, listen, I had to stop because you don't understand, I didn't have a life before I was 40.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have a husband,
I can imagine,
and all that.
I can imagine.
And so,
rough.
Like, if that's the case, like, maybe, yeah, now you're winning me over more than Scary Mommy was. Because I'm like, yeah, if that's the case, like, no, you got to have a life, you know? Because the first thing I noticed in my day job, when I started as a lawyer mate, I used to work with people that had not, and I rarely talk about my day job, so listen up. You know, I used to work with people that hadn't traveled, hadn't done anything. Kids that went straight from, like, sixth form to uni
to
law firm. And that was it. And it was like, I remember running into that. We were all in our late 20s, and I'm like, what? And they're like, well, where are you at? Like, I'm a trainee. Like, I just started this job, and it's like... But I've
lived in Korea.
Yeah, but I've lived here, and I've moved here, and it was like, oh. And, like, you just see the disappointment on their faces, and you're like, well, you could do that too, mate. I had a buddy that midway through... This was, like, the third law firm I worked at. But he literally just left his job to go teach English in France. It was awesome. And everybody else was like, I can't believe he's doing it. I was like, good for you, mate.
Yeah. Like, that should be celebrated.
It should, because that's what I mean. Life is meant to be lived, man. Like, money's cool, don't get me wrong, but just, you know, don't base every decision you have off of money. All right, coming back to Atlanta now.
Yeah.
So, we don't have time, unfortunately, folks, to give you, unless you want to, you know, a Watchmen 2.5 hour, which I don't really think Ed and I are up for tonight, to talk about the whole thing. So, we're going to hit on the end of season 2. So, you know, if you want to just hear what we're talking about, we literally started from episode 5 onward, and we're just going to talk through those kind of last couple episodes, because they lead up to kind of the conclusions on where we might be going with season 3. First season is definitely worth a watch. I would say the first season is incredibly more linear than the second one.
It's about the grind. It's about, like... Young people trying to make it in the music industry in Atlanta.
Right. It's important. Like, it does build, so you cannot see the second season without watching the first. Like, there's something that happens at the end of the second season that, God, they built that up so well from day one, from the very first episode. So I think you just got to do that. But we're starting with season 2 with Barbershop.
Yeah.
So, Ed, why don't you... We'll try to do quick synopsis. Yeah. Like, no more than, like, a minute, maybe 2 minutes, but... Barbershop. Okay. Remember what it's about?
Yes. So the whole thing is about Paperboy, played by Brian Tyree Henry, who's amazing.
Amazing, right?
He's coming up in the Eternals, coming up soon. He's one of those guys that as soon as I saw him in this, I was like, I will watch anything he's in.
Mm-hmm.
But he literally is just trying to get a haircut. He's got a photo shoot coming up, and he's gone to his regular barbershop.
He's a semi-famous rapper now, so the progression from the first scene has been that he's semi-famous.
Yeah, people recognize him and stuff like that. And he goes to his barbershop, and it's just this wacky, crazy series of events that Paperboy gets kind of dragged through by his barber. And it's hilarious. It's so almost like... It reminded me of, like, old comedies, in a way, you know?
Yeah, no.
Like, from the 50s and 40s and stuff.
You, when you're talking, like comedy theory to me, you're always using the MacGuffin and stuff like that. This was all about, like, the MacGuffin going everywhere, you know what I mean? Like, the freaking, like, the craziness of the situation. But that's back like some Abbott Costello, Charlie Chaplin kind of
shit. You totally, know what I mean? Totally.
But the thing I love about this, and this isn't like from personal experience, because this is the whole thing of why I love the show. Like, this is telling you how it would have been from around the way, though. Like, this is this is downtown Atlanta. Like, this is how people get on. You know what I mean? And so that's why you have this kind of like episodic adventure that you've seen before, but now we're telling it through the eyes of a man in a barbershop in like downtown Atlanta. And man, like,
I think that's also one thing that I personally really appreciate about the show in general. Like you, I have no connection to like the South other than I have some family in Texas and stuff like that. But I know nothing about, you know, like that way of life and the things that people go through in that world. My frame of reference tends to be like movies and hip hop and stuff like that. And this just gives you a really kind of honest look, but with laughs and, you know, some sad moments and poignant moments. Even in this, you know, like, I mean, the character of Bibby is so good though, the hairdresser. He's so goddamn funny.
Hey, you want some of his chicken hair, man? Yeah. I thought you said you were buying it, but no, man, it's good stuff. It's still good. It's only been here for like a day. Like, no, we all, I mean, if you've been around the way, everybody knows a guy like that. You know what I mean? Just you probably know like five guys like that. And it was just hilarious that he's just messing with this guy the whole time and the way it continues to go. And then the son gets involved. And that's when I was like, oh my God, this is getting ridiculous. Yes. You know?
Paperboy, inspire these young'uns. Yeah, I love that line. Yeah. And at the end, of course, like after everything, you know, you see Paperboy coming back to the barbershop and he like sits with another hairdresser. And you know, Bibi's all like, oh, okay, fine, you know. But then immediately you can tell the Paperboy wishes that he could go back to Bibby because he knows how to do his hair.
That's what I mean. That's why Donald Glover did it well, though, because then he's like, what do you want, a two or a three? And he was like, what? Yeah. Because, like, the whole, like, I guess this is another reason to talk about Atlanta in general. Atlanta works because it has a theme, and its theme is trying to show you that you have things that you want them to go a certain way, but when you come from around the way, they're going to go another certain way. Hmm. And Donald Glover is really, or Stephen Glover, because he's the one that writes most of this, is really big at pointing out. Now, that barbershop scene, that focuses on the theme of the entire show. Hmm. It's like, you wanted the new barber who's not going to dick you around, who's going to do your hair when you told him to, your famous paper boy. This is what you want. This is what you deserve to get. But wait. Nah, man, you live in crazy Atlanta. And in crazy Atlanta, if you want your hair done properly, you got to accept the fact that crazy man's going to take you on the wild journey, you know, before you get that done. And there's so many instances of that, especially as we build towards the end of that season two, where, you know, there's a couple really big scenes with his character, with Donald Glover's character, you know, that make this very apparent. But it's all about, it's not supposed to go this way, but it does when you live around the way.
Right, yeah. And there's also an episode later on that we'll talk about, but the one where he's kind of roaming through the forest and he's, you know, he got mugged and...
Yeah. So then, that's a good point to move on from, because then we go on to episode six, which is...
Teddy Perkins.
Yeah, it's my favorite episode. So that's the reason I said, let's move on to this one and get it out of the way, because I want to talk, and it's like... So, Teddy Perkins, again, is in episode five. We're going to, you know, we're going to rename the show that after a while, because when I say it's in episode five, it means it's tangential. Barbershop is slightly tangential because you don't have any of the other characters in it. Yeah. It's just Paperboy.
It feels like a one-off. Yeah.
And it's trying to give you a bit about, like, what Paperboy is all built about. Mm. But this one, it really is just a one-off. Like, it's showing you a little bit about the character that plays, you know, this Darius.
Yes, Lakeith Stanfield.
Played by Keith Stanfield. It gives you some insights into him, but not as many as the story just works. Like, it just has to be told the way it has to be told.
Yeah.
And so, how about you give a little bit of the background to Teddy?
Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to mention Lakeith Stanfield. We were talking a little bit before.
Absolutely. It's a good time to jump in with it.
But... he plays Darius, who is like Paperboy's like best friend and his visionary, which I love. He's very eccentric, and he is also just like a really sweet human being, which I really love.
He's
the character,
antithesis to Paperboy. So if Paperboy exemplifies this kind of practical, the world is what it is. Like, don't don't try to make it anything more than, there's not metaphor in life, it just is. Mm. That's his whole thing. Darius is the opposite of that, trying to say, like, life is meant to be enjoyed because everything is a metaphor, you know what I mean? Or life can be seen that way.
Yeah.
And there's a, the next episode, I think, is where you see that the most, where he's with the girls, right?
Talking a lot of philosophy. But Lakeith Stanfield, I first came across him when he was in the short film called Short Term 12, which then was made into a feature film, and I think it won an Oscar. And it also kind of launched the career of Brie Larson, you know, who played Captain Marvel. Mm. And you know, this guy would go on to play some amazing roles. He'd be in Get Out. Such a memorable role that he plays in Get Out as well.
Right, because he has this way of acting, right? So this is why you twig it right off the bat. He has this way of eloquently speaking, which, and I'm just being completely honest, goes against what you would expect because of your own racism, like your own personal racism. He has this
for
way
for Darius's character.
For the way, again, you're judging a book by its cover, and if you did that, you're like, the way he talks about philosophy, it's a bit like the first time I ever saw that impressed the hell out of me, and this is the way the white kids were educated, was when we saw Wu-Tang Clan. All those guys had so many things to say about philosophy, but none of them were anybody that I was ever used to in the suburbs seeing talk about philosophy.
Right,
opened my eyes to the fact that I was prejudiced that way and that I didn't expect...
100% we could start like a fucking Tumblr of like Darius's, you know, quotes and sayings. Because he is very much like a great philosophical character. And Lakeith Stanfield would go on to, be nominated for an Oscar. And he's been crushing it for such a long time that I think it was a really good move for Donald Glover to both get Lakeith Stanfield and Brian Tyree Henry, who'd done like a fair bit of Shakespeare and theatre work and stuff like that. So Teddy Perkins is the name of episode 6 of season 2. And in it, Darius drives a U-Haul, like a van for moving furniture and stuff like that, to this lavish, really expensive mansion somewhere in Atlanta to pick up a piano, a free piano that he wants to get. And he meets Teddy. How would you describe Teddy? Like they,
that's a loaded question. Yeah. I love how you just threw that at me. How do I get away with this without getting yelled at for being racist or crazy?
Certainly, I think he's very heavily inspired by Michael Jackson.
Yes, okay, that's the easiest way for us to say it without being offensive. Yeah. Like, yeah, so
he
so
plays a kind of old musician who.
We've just kind of done the punchline though, because that's the whole point. This is like this. First of all, the whole thing from start to finish is a horror movie. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
It's like that's what I mean when I say it's a one-off, like tonal changes. Like there's no punches pulled that when he's pulling that U-Haul up and everything comes in, everything's dark, quiet.
Yeah.
It is exactly how every horror movie you've ever loved is set up.
And the shots, this one's directed by Hiro Murai, who's one of the producers as well.
I believe so, yeah. So,
and it's you can tell this guy like
knows his horror. Yeah, knows his horror really, really well. Yeah. And so when you meet Teddy is not Michael Jackson. Teddy is a very, very eccentric white man.
Yes.
A very eccentric white man. He doesn't speak much. He kind of stares at you.
Disconcerting.
And I would agree that he looks a lot like Michael Jackson all of a sudden, which you told me was actually Donald Glover playing that. So that would explain the look as to why, because it, it had facial features that wouldn't necessarily match a white face.
Mm.
But it was just odd. Like, you know something's up, but you're not quite sure what it is. And then as the story progresses, and this is why I loved it, because it's very horror style, they give you slow or short reveals of certain things.
Mm.
And so the first thing you learn about is that the piano doesn't belong to Teddy.
That's right.
It belongs to, what's the other guy's name?
Benny. Yes.
And so...
who he cares for.
Yeah. Teddy keeps talking about this. And I mean, Darius...
his brother. He says it's his brother, right?
Yeah, his brother. And the only thing that's not changed comedy style is Darius. Darius is like full on still in stoner comedy mode where he's like, what?
But he's such a sweet guy. He's so, like, understanding. Because a couple of times he calls his, you know, his friends, Paperboy and those guys.
And yeah, and they're trying to tell him. It's just like, yeah, Get Out, where they're trying to say, like, get your ass out of there. Like, you're crazy. That's how people die. Yeah. You know, that's how black men die.
And he's very much like, no, this guy's lonely. Like, I feel like he just wants to off himself, you know, like, stuff like that. And it kind of made me love Darius a little bit more, I must admit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the act one is definitely his decision to stay, because there's all these, like, you got to get out of there, you got to get out of there, you got to get out of there. And act one kind of ends when he's like, no, I want to hear this guy out. He wants to show me a couple things. So then Teddy, like, does some more very bizarre things. First, we find out that Teddy was, like, speaking in an intercom in the beginning. That's one of my favorite parts, where he's, like, talking in this intercom, and Darius is like, oh, isn't your butler going to bring that water you asked for? And he's like, it's not for my butler. That's how I remember. And he plays back all these messages he's supposed to tell himself so he doesn't forget things. Yeah. One of which is really disturbing, and I can't remember what it is. But it's just one of those moments you're like, okay, maybe you should have gotten out of there, Darius. Like, I'm pretty sure this guy's going to kill you now. So then they keep leading you down the trail for that. And it's like, please step in with me into this dark room. Yes. We're noticing, and even Darius is starting to be like, this is messed up. This is messed up. So what I love is the move into act three. So we go through all of this. You think Darius is actually about to get killed. And I was a bit like, oh my God, are they going to kill him off? Like, is this how they get rid of Darius? Is through this crazy one-off episode where they've literally made him killed by this guy he's trying to get a piano from. And then, you know, the end of act two is basically where Darius has figured out that Teddy and Benny are the same person.
Right. He's like, oh, this guy's fucking crazy. He's made up this.
That's right. Brother. And I love the explanation. It's like, just Google Sammy Sosa.
Yes.
Sorry, Sammy, but you are the easiest example. Sammy Sosa hat, because I do love it, because he wears this little pink hat, and he does look like a penis. Like, he looks just like a penis. And so, yes, this is what happens. And so, then you have this whole, like, oh my God, this is a black man who's bleached his skin to look that white. And that's where the Michael Jackson association comes immediately. But what I loved about Act 3 is it doesn't play out the way you think it would. A, Darius doesn't die, thank God.
Yeah.
Because that would have been a big loss. But he has this monologue, you know, it's not a dialogue, because he's speaking at, you know, Teddy and trying to say, you're crazy and, like, this is wrong. And, you know, just because you fucked yourself up, you know what I mean? I get it, but you don't have to be this way. Yeah.
There's also that great, like, insight that you get. I think it's in Act 2 where he shows him the museum, right? And he says, oh, this is my father. And he's got, like, this pedestal with his father's suit.
I completely, because that was the whole other part of it, right? Yeah, so Teddy is always really beneficial about his father, who was a bastard.
Yeah, and he clearly did some fucking horrible shit to him.
Right, like, which is likely what led to Teddy thinking that it was a good idea, or Benny thinking it was a good idea to bleach his skin white. You know what I mean? You know, it's these are all the things that mess with the person's head.
Yeah.
Again, go back to Michael Jackson, because you have to remember, like, Michael Jackson came from a very broken family. You know what I mean? His father was supposed to be a monster.
And I think you know, they even call out, like, he says that one day I hope to make this a place to celebrate the parents that push their children to great heights, you know, and he mentions Marvin Gaye and Tiger Woods and Serena Williams, and you do kind of begin to sympathize with this clearly very, like, messed up person, you know?
And Darius is trying to help, too. So that's, I shouldn't say that Darius isn't, like, admonishing him. He's more being like, you can come out of your you can come out of your shell, because you're right to point out that Darius is really never, ever mean, I think, on the show itself. He's always trying to be kind of sympathetic to the people he talks to. That's his character.
Oh, and that's why I love him.
That's very much you. That's how Ed is. You know what I mean? That's why Ed works so well as a director, because he's the sympathetic one out of the two of us. He will always kind of be able to feel or understand that other side of it. So he's trying to say, no, it's okay. Like, you don't have to keep up with this crazy shit, man. And then that's the break in Act 3 I was talking about, because the part I like is he gets actually pushed back quite heavily from Teddy on that. And Teddy's like, you don't know what my life is like. Could you imagine waking up looking like this every day? He just breaks down at the very end when there's this, isn't there, because Benny's supposed to be in the chair, and there's this like subplot about the gun.
Yeah, there's a moment where Darius kind of meets Benny, and he's like, sure. And I was sure that it's Teddy wearing, like, a face mask and rolling himself in a, and he's not speaking, he's talking through a chalkboard and stuff. But then later it's
really, well, this is the thing, the actor. So then we hear that speech, and then we get to the final mind fuck, which is, and I'll let you tell it, because it is so perfectly done.
I mean, so eventually, you know, the fake Benny that Darius met told him to go get a gun in the attic. He eventually goes back and he sees Teddy, who's watching a film of him being like tortured by his father to stand up straight and play the piano on this projector.
Yeah, we still don't see anybody else in that picture.
Yeah, you haven't seen them both together and,
at all. Yeah. So you're for sure. Yeah. You're for sure that this is what it's all about. Michael Jackson.
Yeah, he pulls a gun on Darius, takes him downstairs into the chair, and he basically tells him, oh yeah, I'm going to kill my brother, and I'm going to kill you, and it's going to be my sacrifice, and this is, it's going to be like a home invasion that went wrong, this and that. And then the elevator opens and out rolls Benny, you know, and like what happens? Because he kills Teddy.
Yeah. And then blows his brains out all over Darius.
Shocking.
Like, it was one of those things I felt like that had been written just to fuck with me, because I was sure that that was the point of the story, that we were supposed to hear about the urban legend and this is what happens when you bleach your skin, you end up looking like this. But no, they were like, nah, mate, this is where they turned it back into a comedy, because they were like, no, you don't actually know what's going on, Benny's real, and here he is, and they're both, and then it just ends, and it was like, that was brilliant. I mean, it just was one of those things. Does it resolve the conflict of the discussion? No, that was the whole point, is maybe it's just a dumb discussion to have in the first place.
I thought it was brilliantly bookended.
You still
as well.
Need to all Google Sammy Sosa pink hat out there, by the way. It will make you fucking laugh.
I thought it was so well bookended as well by the Stevie Wonder songs. You had Sweet Little Girl right at the beginning and Evil at the end.
Well, and that's the other bit where I thought, and this is why it's actually going to be talking about it, because where I had thought, I'm still on the podcast talking more about the white-black thing. Mm. That was the whole point. Like, they talked about Stevie because Benny had met Stevie. Yeah, they were talking about it, and they were like, Stevie never saw this because it wasn't because he was blind. It was just he was just a good guy. And like, when he wrote, it was this.
I think, wasn't that the moment that also Darius like kind of almost got to Teddy, where he was like, Stevie was blind, but he wasn't blinded.
Yeah, yeah. So they're having this thought about like what it is
very
to make,
philosophical
to make the music,
right?
Right? Yeah. And what it meant, why Stevie was such an uplifting
brilliant
character.
So many levels. You know?
Right? Yeah. But that's what I mean. The level I thought it was on was like, ha, I got this now. I know how this ends. And it was like, no, man, it's just part of the discussion. like this is just straight up horror. Yeah. And it was just brilliant because it flips it on its heads, and that reminds you that all of these arguments are arguments, man. Like, that's what I loved about the show, is it never took itself at any one point too seriously. Certain things happen to move the story forward, and they have to happen that way.
Yeah, it's just such a free kind of show. It doesn't feel restricted in its storytelling, and I think that, for me, is what I really appreciate about
it. No, it's the honesty. It's the unafraidness. Donald Glover wasn't afraid to say, and I don't know if you grew up around that way. I don't know about his background. I haven't read any of the interviews saying where he grew up. But, you know, like,
He's from Atlanta.
He definitely wanted to tell a tale of, this is what it's like when you don't have money. This is what it's like when you don't come from the right side of the tracks. But I love the fact that he stops there. He doesn't say, and because of that X, Y, Z, he says, no, that's the way things worked out in this story. You know, he's not, it's an important thing, because I feel where you get bigger with that, it works better in film. You know, you have things like messages like Get Out, or even subconnotations in Us and things like that, that are talking about bigger things than that. But when you're talking about a sitcom that's 20 minutes long, like, sometimes you just need the action to move forward. And he is brilliant at that. It's saying like, well, you know, decide what you want. On Teddy, it was like, decide what you want about this urban myth and whatnot, but it was a horror story. And here's how I have to move it forward, because we're taking this piano, we're moving out of here. Mm. So then we move on to the next episode, though. Another one that and I think you mentioned this one a bunch of times because of the reference to Drake.
Yeah, I...
And so, like, I can't stand Drake. I know that's controversial, guys.
I'm with you.
I just don't get the music.
I don't get the music.
And maybe if I sat down with Drake, because everybody seems to want to sit down with this guy, and I guess I'll get in line. Like, you know, if I sat down with him and he explained to me where the music comes from, I might get it better. But it's just a different type of rap than I've ever experienced.
100%. And he's a Raptors fan. Like, you know, we should be best buds.
Yeah, you know, and maybe it's like, I'm being taught that there's, like, an evolution in rap. And it was mentioned in the show, actually, when he's talking about, actually, you know, rap hasn't gotten bad, it's just evolved. It's just different now than it used to be, and that's a good thing. You know, it hasn't fallen off the side. It's just, you know, there are now new art forms within, subgenres within rap.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just don't appreciate it the way I should.
No, 100%.
But this was all about a party at Drake's.
Yes. Champagne puppy.
Oh, and then it brings up my other favorite character, because you knew I was going to love her. Of course. Zazie Beetz, right?
Yes.
Like, Jesus. Like, please get in one of my movies. That's the thing. I'm not saying that from, like, oh, my God, I have a beautiful wife. I love my kid. Like, you know, all of that stuff. But, man, I saw her in Invincible. And really, that character in Invincible is her. Like, that's her playing her.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, again, she plays her in this. Like, she's just fierce. You know
what I mean?
She's very
cool. I hate that word.
But, that's how I would describe her. Like,
she does...
Very modern, you know?
Yeah, yeah. She reminds me a little bit of what's the name of the actress from Thor Ragnarok? Valkyrie. She's English.
Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about, but I don't know her name, mate. I'm terrible. I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah. I can even see the scene where she does the thing with the guns and moves them. Like, it's so cool.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, she has that kind of frankness to her. The modern woman. And I do feel, this is controversial as fuck now, I do feel African-American women are sometimes, or British-African women are sometimes better placed for this. Because they have to walk a different line than a white girl. And so Zazie Beetz shows you the modern African or mixed woman.
Mm.
And I'm always trying to explain that to people. Because it's like, you know, it's different than being this suburban girl that's got different kind of troubles, different things. These are people that have to walk the beat. You know what I mean?
It's also not something that we see on screen very often.
Exactly.
You know? They just aren't.
But we
the
should
roles.
Because 100%. Because if I was teaching my, and I guess here's the point. Like before people are like, what the fuck are you talking about, Jason? If I was to teach my daughter and say, like, these are the type of women you need to emulate because they know what they're doing with their life, or at least they're going to get more of what they want out of life, it would be make her watch a person like Zazie Beetz. Because good shit happens, bad shit happens to this woman, but she just keeps doing her thing.
She does her thing.
And that's, I think, why she has such a connection in the story to Donald Glover's character. Because they're both people that do not give a shit what people say about them. They're going to do what they're going to do.
They're on the grind. Yeah. But she is fantastic. They're at Drake's house. It's New Year's Eve. And she's like having a night out with her girlfriends.
And they've split up, haven't they, in the story at this point.
So she and Earn, which is Donald Glover's character.
Yeah, why haven't I said his name? It's such a great name.
They have a child together. But they're not together.
But they're kind of... They were kind of...
Yeah, there's a very kind of, like, will they, won't they thing going on here. Which is fine. I'm totally...
terribly
okay
honest will they, won't they.
Yeah.
Because it's where I would say a modern couple. Because one of the problems we have with baby boomers, and it's filtered onto my generation as well, maybe the old millennials, is this... The obligation kind of slash relationships where, you know what I mean? People feel like they have to keep on with these things. And they have to keep going with them. Whereas I find that younger generations, and this is old man Jason talking now, have a much more realistic view of what relationships are. They're a choice.
Mm.
And so you're either in them or you're not in them, but you don't have to be in them indefinitely. There's nothing forcing you to be with another person.
I would say that, I mean, right from the very opening scene where they're getting ready to go out with, you know, with their friends and stuff, you know, she's looking on Instagram and she sees Earn in a picture with another girl. Right. And I think that was also a great message from this particular episode with regards to like social media and everything like that, because Van, who is played by Zazie Beetz, she like her goal is to get to this Drake New Year's Eve party and get a selfie with him.
Yeah.
which has a very funny conclusion. but like they arrive at the party, you know, it's heaving. And they're offered...
I'm always interrupting. Okay, just interrupt because of the Instagram thing that you were saying. Hmm. Like, the other thing that I find that the show, in 20 to 30 minutes, again, he's got to get his points across quickly. He is very good. The directors are all very good at doing show me, not tell me. Hmm. There's not a lot of... Stuff like that's how they get around dialogue. Instead of saying, like, where's Earn, what's he up to, which would have been boring, it's just a quick flick to the Instagram.
Hmm.
That's the kind of stuff that makes better filmmakers, okay? When you can do that in 10 seconds through a picture rather than showing, you know, rather than having a 2 or 3 minute dialogue on something that isn't really that interesting for the moment. So I just wanted to point that out. There are a million examples of that throughout Atlanta. Mm. So just watch for them where he's showing you something he wants you to know rather than telling you.
I think one of the things that I really liked in this episode as well was, there's another show that did this really well. I don't know if you ever saw the Aziz Ansari sitcom that he did. It was really good. I think you'd really like it. But watching this, and there was a moment where Van, she goes down with some guy she's just met, and he's showing her, you know, like where the bathroom is and where she can charge her phone and stuff. And at first, it's kind of sweet and it's cute and stuff.
Oh man, but that very scene, quickly, that scene built dread out of nothing too, because there was no dread. No. Whatsoever. And
you start to feel like a discomfort, and you're worried about her safety and stuff like that. And the way she navigates it is like quite brilliant, but it definitely made me think, God, can you imagine being a young woman at a party?
No, but that's what this show, amongst other shows, like, it was better at doing that than a lot of other things. And that's why these one-offs, I really wanted to focus on them, because we're going deep into her mind, deep into that kind of protagonist. You're with her because that dread builds.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, even if you've never had that happen, which we're men, we haven't. Like, I'm just being honest, it doesn't happen to guys. Like, we don't walk into the bottom of somewhere, you know, and someone's trying to stalk us or whatever. Like, if you're a dude, you just fucking leave. You know, you just do what you want. And that's not fair. But it is reality. Like, it is how things play out a lot of times. I'm not condoning it at all. I'm just saying, us getting into that mind is an eye-opener to every man watching and being like, that's what she's talking about. When your wife comes home, or your girlfriend, or your friend that's a girl tells you about that experience, don't blow it off like all men do. Because we do, because it doesn't happen to us, so it's hard to get a frame of reference.
And this is why I bring up the Aziz Ansari sitcom, because they have this episode, it's so brilliant, where they juxtapose a night out for a guy in New York and a night out for a girl in New York. And it's just, it's so funny and it's so poignant.
That is always a lot of fun to do. I mean, my sister and I do that a lot when it comes to talking about race, because our experiences with race have been nearly completely different. I mean, when you're a light-skinned but dark-skinned woman, you're exotic. And that's the worst word. You get used to hearing that absolutely freaking everywhere. Yeah. You know, she's exotic. I don't think I've ever been called exotic. I'd love to be, by the way. It's just different for a guy. And so that's what I mean. Like, that experience, it's only when you talk to the other person that you realize that, like... Because I guess the point I bring up is I never realized that. You know, this is my sister. I grew up with her. And so when we talked about this literally like a year ago, it was like, oh, that's what it was like for you. Like, weird. Like, so no one ever cared about that. But what did they do? Wow, I had a lot of guys date me because I was, you know, a skin color. It's, you know what I mean? And I was prettier because I was darker. You know what I mean? It was like, oh... So that's what I mean. I would have never realized that. But this was, again, getting us right into her mind as she wanders the home of Drake.
Yes. I'll be honest, not my favorite episode. Like, once a guy showed up, Lakeith Stanfield, and he's talking about the Bostrom simulacrum.
It had all the elements, the Hangover elements. You know, this has been epitomized by Hangover, but it's always in this. You know, the girl that never takes drugs takes a gummy, and she's fucked. Absolutely fucked.
She calls the police at one point. She says, "I'm dying."
What's the other one? The other one's really funny. The other one's trying to get with some celebrity who's already with. Yes. That was great because of the reversal. So that's another. Okay, so that's why, and I wanted to go through these episodes because there were moments in each of them that I was 100%. Like, so my moment, the one that I just like that I'll steal and use it somewhere else was the black girl to white girl back to black girl argument, and it just was so well done. And again, no one's taking a side in that argument. It's just done really well. So first you have the black woman who's upset that the black famous, celebrity has a white girl around his arm, and she just thinks it's cliche. And you do hear that, god, you know, every time. It's like, and don't get me started about my own family. You know what I mean? But, like, it is cliche to have the black guy always has the white girl on the arm. You know, the amount of times you hear that. And it is ridiculous. You know, some people are in love, some people aren't in love. But the whole point that's being made is whose fucking business is that anyway? But it goes a step further in this one. So she finally confronts white girl on the couch. And I was waiting and I was ready. I was like, yeah, you're going to stick it to her. Stick it to the white girl. Yeah. So she does. And she's like, and you just think it's all right to do this. So then... Then you have what I thought, and this is because I was raised so white. Like, I thought it was a very honest explanation.
Yeah, a very fair argument.
We're in love, we're blah, blah, blah. And then, sorry, I had to laugh because it hit like a brick. Then there's the rebuttal. And it's the rebuttal that I just found so well poised, being like, that may be all well and good, white girl. However, around the way... We have different considerations than you.
I like the famous actor at the end, he's like, I'm sorry.
Just, you know, the summation of her argument was must be nice. And that was really how it was. But it was just because it was unexpected. I felt once the white girl had given her diatribe, it was going to be like, well, you know what? That's an honest explanation. And then, you know, Donald Glover turns it around and says, no, 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 wait. I got one more for you. Anyways, moving on to the next episode then. What was the next one?
Woods.
Oh.
So this is the one where Alfred, or Paperboy, he goes off with his girlfriend, or a girl that he's kind of been seeing. She's like an Instagram famous influencer or something.
Right, right, right.
And she kind of badges him a little bit about him stepping up his game. I think this one definitely kind of went a little bit back to the main arc of the story.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, because she kind of starts planting the seed of doubt about his manager, Ern, who's his cousin, played by Donald Glover. But he eventually kind of gets fed up. He walks out and he starts walking. At which point he comes across some guys who recognize him. And they seem quite friendly at first. But then they turn around and pull a gun. They mug him. They take his wallet, his watch, and his chain and stuff. And they kind of wrestle over a gun. Eventually, he kind of flees off into the woods. And it's kind of like a bit of a journey. It's almost like a walkabout that he has to kind of go through, you know?
Yeah, it definitely gets episodic all of a sudden with the different, like, encounters. What are the different encounters? Yeah, I'm trying to remember them all.
So he runs into the homeless guy in the forest.
Okay.
This feels like it has a very kind of hero's journey kind
yeah,
of
that's what I mean.
Vibe
Odysseus,
to
it. Yeah, yeah, it's, you know, do you know what Odysseus I mean? Getting yeah. home, right?
That's what I'm saying.
You know,
yeah.
that he's even setting it up. He has to get home, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
So. Yeah, yeah.
And the reason we're telling you that is, guys, that's Odysseus. Like, Donald Glover or Stephen Glover, who wrote this, is taking from another story and just inserting it into a new setting.
Yeah, yeah. Again, he's kind of followed by this homeless guy, and, like, he eventually, like, pulls a knife on him and stuff like that. It's just quite a harrowing kind of day. What I really liked about this, though, is that you kind of learnt a lot about Alfred through his struggle. Do you know what I mean? Like, at the end, and maybe I'm jumping the gun, so interrupt me if you want to.
No.
But at the end of walking, it's just, you know, it's gone to nighttime and stuff. He ends up inside like a garage, like a place where you buy drinks, you know, and petrol and stuff. Or gas, and like, you would imagine he's just had the worst fucking day you could possibly imagine. He's been beaten, mugged, threatened, shot at, all this kind of shit. And a kid walks up to him and he's like, hey man, are you Paperboy? And his reaction is, yeah man, come over here, let's take a selfie together. Like, he's got bleeding gums and stuff like that. Like, it says so much with very little dialogue.
Yeah, and I think you've hit it on, again, as the hero's journey. Because, again, every episode's going to have a particular arc. That's one of the stories you can use when we go back to Save the Cat, of what are the stories that exist in film and in TV. This is one of them, right? And I think it's important to go to that, because the only reason this episode is so effective in teaching you about Alfred is because he learns it about himself throughout the whole thing. So what I really loved about this episode is it was so pure. In other words, your protagonist is Alfred Easy, right?
Yeah.
He's going through this journey, which goes into the woods in the midpoint. Okay, guys, that is a trope that is used all the time. The dark woods appears in the middle of the hero's journey, okay? This is not anything original. This is him trying to get his character from the point A point to the point B point, because in the next episode, it's going to be important that Alfred has changed and realized what he needs. And so the whole point is, we have the initial discussion before the story really starts properly with his girlfriend, who he ends up hating in the end because it's not really his girlfriend.
Mm.
But she's trying to tell him, like, you keep giving a shit about keeping it real and keeping it on the streets.
Yeah.
you know, what she's really trying to say is you don't really remember what that's like. Right. So maybe
yeah, that was an interesting argument that she kind of laid to him, you know.
Right, and then Donald Glover, Stephen Glover, shows that throughout the rest. So when he's mugged by the three kids, it's the start of, this is the way.
Mm.
This is what happens is what in the neighborhoods you grow up in when people are hardcore and sell drugs. And don't get me wrong, this is not me trying to say I know all about it. I don't. But I'm trying to say that is the message that's being delivered
that's
the to
story
him.
That's
being like, now. You really want to be... This story is not a new one either. That particular concept. Watch the movie on Notorious B.I.G. That is the entire message of that film between Puff Daddy and Notorious B.I.G. I always thought it was a buddy film because of the present Puff Daddy in that film. And so the whole thing he's trying to say is like, you can either rap and make money about being around the way, or you can be the guy from around the way, and you don't want to be both. And this is kind of what she was saying to him, saying like, you don't want to be the drug dealer, you know, that lives back on there, because drug dealers don't live long, you know? And he had forgotten that. I honestly, that's the whole point. Mm. So the journey that he goes on, though, is just bit by bit by bit by bit by bit, him realizing what he's got now and how that's going to take him away from being around guys who can mug him and being around the homeless guy who can stab him and all this different shit he's gone through. And so that's, I think, what's truly amazing about it at the end is the realization comes, you know, directly from Alfred, but obviously we've been in his shoes throughout the whole thing, so it comes to us as well. And it's really important for the next episode, which is the one where they all go up to the college, right?
North of the border, yeah.
Right. And that's interesting because that is... When I saw the title, I was like, huh? I was what border are we talking about? Because there had been an earlier episode, the one which he breaks up with his... Where Earn breaks up with Zazie Beetz's character, where they went to, like, the suburbs where she was from. And actually, I could relate a lot to that because, like, there's only, what, two token black people in that entire episode. And it's a big joke. Like, they make a lot of jokes about that. But what Zazie's character tries to say is, this is where I'm from. Like, you got to respect that. And Earn can't get there. He's like, I'm not. And I don't get why people are the way they are out here. I'm really sorry. Mm. But the racial prejudices are too big out here for me to ignore. And I don't think it's fair that you drag me along with it.
Mm.
Now we're getting to a point where we're looking at, you know, Earn and Alfred. And Alfred's new problem is that he's not sure him and Earn understand, you know, kind of where they're at with things.
Hmm.
And so they go out to this college thing because Earn is trying to prove that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's making moves.
And things like that. And it all, you know, in typical comedy fashion, goes horribly wrong.
Yeah. Like, to save on money on a hotel, Earn has Paperboy staying with this girl who's organizing the event, who's, like, obsessed with him, and she's, like, coming on to him, but in a really weird kind of way. She tells him about a dream she's had. I mean, clearly, this girl has issues. And it all kind of comes to the head after the show, where she gets into an altercation with Tracy, who's one of the friends of Paperboy, who they brought along to act as security.
Because he's straight out of prison.
Right. And
he's supposed to be an anchor. So just to explain, Tracy's character is an anchor in the show. An anchor onto the purest version of people who live around the way, so to speak, in Atlanta. So, you know, he's just out of prison. So he's going to be as raw, I guess would be the word, as you can make it. And there's that. This episode is the one where this kind of comes to a head, why I think it's important to point that out.
Mm. Eventually, they kind of run out of the party that they were...
That's right. So, I mean, like, it's one of those things that's good at looking at two ways. Like, the altercation with Tracy, I mean, he tries to push her off the stairs.
Yeah.
And only because Earn catches her does she not, like, break her neck.
Yeah, yeah. You know that could have been a lot worse.
And so, that sets up the rub, because Earn thinks it's, you know, Tracy and ultimately Alfred's fault that this is all happening.
For letting him come along.
He doesn't control his people. But Alfred is trying to teach Earn something here that Earn understands, or that Alfred understands better than Earn. Earn is under the impression, and this is just all my interpretation, so please correct me if I'm wrong here, Ed, but Earn is under the impression that because they're at a college and because they're with people like that, that everything will be civilized and that there's not going to be any problems.
Mm.
And what Alfred is trying to point out is saying, like, nothing ever goes right for us, guys. Yeah. Like, don't try to think that you're better than us. Mm. Like, nothing will go right if you play it this way. Mm-hmm. You have to remember where you're from and how, you know, what that requires. And that's a growing theme throughout season one and season two.
Mm.
So, yeah, so they have the altercation, they run out, and then what happens?
They end up at a frat house that is in the middle of a hazing ritual. and they get there by following their noses, by smelling the weed.
Smelling the weed.
Yeah.
Always a good thing to do on a college campus, folks. You can always find safety by the smell of weed.
And it was kind of interesting because...
kind of?
One of the frat guys is clearly, like, a fan of hip-hop, right? And he starts, like... talking about these old tracks and
this is you not knowing the South though. Like the reason this is crazy is dude, this place is not, there's not one black person place.
Yeah.
A Confederate flag is big as the place is draped in the background. And these are good old boys. Yeah. And that's a term anybody from the South would know. Like these are good old boys.
Yeah.
And so there shouldn't be any reason that the dudes from around the way and the good old boys are getting along with one another. Mm. It all seems okay at first.
It gets really weird when the pledges that are wearing sacks over their heads and are completely naked. And I think that's where Disney probably also did a little bit of editing because they blurred.
Did they blur it out? I didn't notice if they blurred it out or not. Like
blurred all the junk. Oh man,
that was dance rough as well. That was rough, but that is kind of like, man. That was, again, them showcasing two different, like, subcultures so quickly and so easily and then showing how fucked up that was. I mean...
I love that Darius and Tracy are also... Darius is like, yeah, I've always wanted to join the NRA. You know, he's like a gun enthusiast.
Yeah.
And they go off to the gun room to see. But I think there's quite a cathartic moment because, like you say, they have... Paperboy and Earn have this conversation where Paperboy says, is like you say, trying to teach him something. He's saying, no, this is about you, man.
Like, yeah, like, we should have never been here. Like, you know, it's his whole point.
He's like,
you're the manager. This is your job to kind of take this all together. And what we should point out, you'd know if you're watching the show, in the background, there's all of Earn's old friends kind of trying from this old agency he used to be at, trying to pick up Paperboy. Like, people that are in the industry. Like, this is another thing that kind of goes on in the background is he has... some very successful friends that don't help him out at all, but have done well for themselves at the same company he was at and are always trying to poach Paperboy because it's his big client, his only big client.
Right. Yeah.
So that one ends, that sets you up. I mean, the ending of that was the most brutal ending. Like, I kept wanting to have a better ending than it did. But so basically what happens, and this is... again, Donald Glover is sticking to the theme and saying, I'm not going to sugarcoat this for you. This is exactly what happens in these situations. So, obviously, there's an altercation beforehand. But then, they're in the car driving back. And I love this part. Because Donald Glover's Earn is like, this is all your fault, Tracy. And Tracy is not, like, again, I'm not joking when I say he's raw. He's straight out of prison. But he's also a really... big fucking guy.
Yeah.
And Earn is not. No. Earn is a small guy. And so Alfred, who like always plays this kind of quiet older brother type, is trying to tell Earn, stop pissing off Tracy and let it go. Like, it was dumb. It's over. We're all driving home now. And this is after a lot of other shit has just happened, which has really pissed off Earn as well. But still, the message is trying to get through to Earn that, like, we've lost. Let's just accept the defeat and go home. And Earn can't take it. He's pissed. And so he keeps pushing Tracy to the point where he's like, I'm going to get out of this car and beat the living fuck out of you. Now, everyone in the car and everyone watching knows that's not going to happen because Tracy is huge. He just got out of prison and you're like, this could never possibly go in his way. But you're hoping that at some point there's a moment where this kind of retracts and that you don't see the protagonist get the shit kicked out of him. Nope. You see this, the protagonist get the living piss beaten out of him. And then doesn't it fade to credits? Is that fade to black after that?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
And so, like, I love that because it was the ending, not the ending I wanted, but the ending you needed to say, like, this is the point of this show is that Earn gets what he deserves a lot of times because he's not quite figured out what he's supposed to do as a manager. Which leads us, I think...
I know, the last shot is them all in the car, silent.
Yeah.
Like, after and Earn's he's been face bitten. Is
yeah, just yeah, yeah. beat the fuck
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love this show really kind of lingers on shots sometimes. like particularly transitioning from one scene to another. And I really, really like
that.
Well,
because the thing I reason, and maybe it's because I can relate to this too. I have been got the fuck beaked out of me before for starting the shit with the wrong guy. But we're taught to stand up. Like, stand up to the bully, stand up to the blah, 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 do this. And Ern is just, like, echoing that bullshit that we hear about. You don't have to, you know, you should always stand up for yourself. The truth is you shouldn't always stand up for yourself. If there's a 6'7" dude that looks 275 pounds and you're 175 pounds, that is not a man you want to do anything to except run. You know what I mean? Mm. So... that's the whole point, is he's losing common sense for the sake of doing what he's been told to do by God knows who. But leads us to the, you know, probably one of the best episodes of the entire two seasons, which is...
FUBU.
FUBU.
Yes.
For us. By, no, is it? For us, by you. That's Bufu, sorry. I think of how high Bufu. By us, fuck you.
Yeah, that's right.
Bufu.
So this is a flashback episode.
I mean, were you part of the FUBU craze?
No, it kind of passed. It was. We didn't really get FUBU in.
There were like adverts on Cincinnati. Like, I'm talking local from like, what was it, Derek's or something like that. Like, one guy carried it, and it was, man, it was marketed to the black community like you wouldn't believe. Like, come get your FUBU. But, you know, it was just an era.
But in this episode, we have a flashback to the late 90s, and it's, we follow Ern as a middle school kid.
Mm.
And he picks up a...
if he's the same age as us, that'll be like 96, 97.
Yeah. And he picks up a FUBU shirt that's on sale in like Marshall's, which I guess is like a...
Department store,
yeah.
Bit like a TK Maxx.
Mm. And he's super excited, and he's obviously going back to school. The day he's going back to school, he gets up immediately before the alarm's even ringing. And he's got the shirt laid out. I mean, he's clearly very excited to go back to school. And I think that's something we can all kind of, like, connect with.
Yeah, you know? And again, the reason we smile when we talk about this, Ed, is because just like we talked about three episodes ago, the horror episode was a horror episode. This is all within that world. Like, immediately we are pulled out of the adult Ern's mind. We don't even really know. First, it's baby Ern, so to speak, but... you were put into a middle schooler's
body
with all that panic. And that, like, I liked it because I could relate to it. Like, I remember middle school being like that.
Mm.
And it was, like, it was interesting because it wasn't a middle school like I had gone to, but it was a middle school. And it was like, these are what you deal with on a day-to-day basis as, like, a middle schooler. You're terrified about what everybody else is doing. You know, and you're obsessed with it, to be honest.
I was just transported by the opening song, which is Give Me One Reason by Tracy Chapman.
Yeah.
And it just took me back to the late 90s and that time period. It was just really, really well written and really well acted. The kids are brilliant. And it deals with, you know, bullying. And
That's what I mean. Instead of sticking to, and this is where, I mean, he could have stuck to, I said the previous episode is like the focus point, right? And it's talking about Ern's not doing what he's supposed to do.
Mm.
You know, and he could have just capped on that ride and made everything in this particular episode, like, leading that. And there are elements that link up.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the ending of this episode is still showing you where this is going to end up with at the end of season two, which we'll talk about before we close the show out.
Yeah.
That'll probably be the end. But then it's like, no, but that's one problem. But actually, we've got all these other stuff going on right now. And we've got Ern, we've got his mom, who's hilarious and buys him these shirts because he asked for them.
Yes. When she's bought him a second one at the end of the episode, I couldn't stop laughing.
But the other thing I loved is how much of the FOMO was built into, like, class wars on this one. And it was talking about, like, how you would be perceived by the rest of the class if you came in wearing raggedy clothes. Now, where I went to school, that's exactly how it was. It was horrible.
Yeah.
You know, like, rich kids are rich kids, and they will shit on anyone who they think... And kids are worse than adults with this kind of stuff.
It's one of the reasons why I kind of don't disagree with uniforms, you know, for school and stuff. At least it makes sense from that perspective. But anyway, Ern goes to school wearing his new shirt, but it turns out that another kid has got a very similar shirt, same color, FUBU as well, but they're a little bit different.
Yeah, one has, like, official tags on it. And they both have the same story. Well, a similar story. One says, I got it from my dad.
Mm.
The other says, I got it from my mom. Like, neither of them bought it themselves.
Mm.
It was a gift.
Yeah.
But they're both panicked about it. Like, absolutely panicked. And that's what I loved, because it was, like, it was middle school panic, which... Yeah. I guess the way I mean that, I have a 7-year-old now, but she's going to be going into that phase, and everything seems bigger than it is.
Right.
Like, they're panicked about it. If we were, like, parents, we'd be like, what's the big deal? But for them, because they have to live it every day at school, like, it's a huge deal. If they are wearing fake clothing and someone finds out about it, they'll never live it down. And it means, I guess it's because it's their life. Yeah. You know, I guess maybe that's the difference for a parent is it's not our lives anymore. Like, I don't have to go into a middle school ever again.
It's just amazing to juxtapose the kind of sweet innocence of the Stranger Things middle school kids, you know, like riding their bikes and
stuff. Right, right. It was the part I always tried to say was bullshit, because I'm like, well, it wasn't that idyllic, right, but it was never that idyllic, you know, no matter who you were. You know what I mean? Middle school is tough for anybody, but in those well-to-do communities, like, you know, and those are well-to-do suburbs, you know, it's like, people are vicious. Kids are vicious. Yeah.
So the whole thing kind of progresses, and there's this kid, Johnny, who's going to know which of the shirts is fake. Ern starts to panic, and he goes to his cousin Alfred, who's obviously in the same school as him.
Right, and another thing this is trying to do is to show that as, and it's very true, I, you know, I hate to admit this, but as you were as a child, there are lots of things you will be as an adult, and this is trying to do that. It's trying to say Ern has these problems as an adult. He had these problems as a child too.
And it shows that connection that makes a lot of sense for Ern and
the Alfred. Big brother role, because Alfred is this other kid who like just doesn't give a fuck. And you can
I love that he's in like an ROTC uniform.
Right? You're like, where did that come from, right? You're like, was he in the military? Yeah. Like shit. Paper boy. Oh, yeah. Paper boy. So what happens then? So
it progresses. There's the panic. Alfred basically tells him that it's all about confidence. You shouldn't worry. You should just like own it. That kind of thing.
He says that, but he also says, and don't ever fucking say it's a fake. Like that's the other, the round the way part. It's like, you don't know it's not fake. Yeah. So why the fuck tell anybody else it is?
And at one point he like pulls a thread.
Right.
And, like,
so he thinks it is, but he's like, you don't have to admit that. Like who told you it was a fake?
And there's like notes from girls like, oh, you know, are you interested in this? But is that a fake? Because she doesn't like...
No, is that what... Sorry, she's not a broke-ass, you know, N-word, which we won't say on the show, right?
It did such a great job of capturing the fear of a young kid.
The microcosm of that world. Exactly. And I guess it makes sense to me now, because I just realized that's your world. Like, that's what you live in every day. So that's why it can get like that.
Eventually, though, this kid, it's the end of the day. He thinks he's getting out. But just as he's about to get out, he gets grabbed. This kid, Johnny, shows up, looks at the label, and he claims that Ern's is the fake.
Right, because one's made in, like, Taiwan, the other's made in Singapore, and he's like, oh,
they're all... One's made in China, one's made in Bangladesh.
That's it, and he's like, oh, they're all made in China, not in Bangladesh, so that must be the fake.
At that point, Alfred shows up, and he, like, just fakes it. He's like, he looks at
the... He does what he told Ern to do. Yeah, he's like, just be confident, and he looks, and because he just comes in looking like a badass, and you know, no one wants to mess with him, so he's like, yep, that's the real one.
Yeah, I know, trust me.
Like trust me, I do trust you because that's horrible, but it works. Yeah, like, Jesus, like, that's confidence, guys. Like, that's very how true. Ridiculous that works.
So what then happens is Ern is obviously elated because he's not going to get ridiculed. He gets on the other bus, but he sees, like, the
what
older
happened
kids.
To the other kid.
Yeah, like, going after
and this,
the other kid.
And this is where the codas... in this show kill you every time. You know what I mean? Like, I just said it about the horror one, and that one, the act three was like, oh, the act three on this one is heart-wrenching.
It is. And it says so much about Alfred. Like, it even though it is, like you say, it seems like disconnected, but it's so intertwined.
It is disconnected from the story we want to hear. And that's where I really liked
the
about it.
The main arc.
The story you would go with would end there. And it'd be like, Ern got off, and that's why he's always been in debt to his to his big brother Al, his big cousin Al, that bailed him out. Except, then we find out that the other kid killed himself in the evening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's this big discussion about that. And everybody is trying to deal with it. And it's just... heart-wrenching because
I don't think it's like it's not explicitly said because of the terrible bullying that he experienced. Like, they mention him having had problems with his family and stuff like that, but in Ern's head
his parents were divorced,
right? Yeah,
and this just added to it.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe because that was my experience as well in middle school. Mm. Like this was, we never had any kids kill themselves, thank God. Mm. But this was the pressures.
Yeah.
That people had things at home they were dealing with and things at school they were dealing with.
And nobody, you know.
No one cares.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And man, I you know, I'm going to write a book about all that stuff someday. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff I've told you about, people have come to me about stuff that people didn't care about in middle school. But it just hits hard. And it works because it also points out that Al's not necessarily right. Earn's not necessary. Right? Again, I like that it says, I'm not cookie cuttering this. I'm not doing this.
This is the real life.
This is the way it is. Yeah. These are my arguments. You make your decision on this.
Yeah.
And that leads to the final episode, which I think is by far.
Yeah, but before, I just want to say the ending song, If I Ruled the World by Nas.
Yeah, I mean, that's Fugle. Classic. You know how it's put there. I mean, that was classic when it came out. You know what I mean?
So like, incredible.
But it was classic for kids like that. You know, this is me sounding like the other one we've skipped over is the dinner party with the white guy married to the black girl, and I really felt, Jesus, that's not me, is it? The one who's like, come look, I have this painting about this, and she goes to that party with Earn. I think it's in season one. Maybe you didn't watch it.
I didn't watch it this time.
So I only had him watch Selected. So there's an episode earlier on where they have to go to this dinner party at a very wealthy black woman's house. I can't remember her name now. And she's married to this white dude who just loves everything about emancipation.
Mm.
Like he's just obsessed. Mm. And it's like she is his token black woman.
Right.
And he writes poetry and rap. And I mean, you need to go back and watch this tonight. Because it's hilarious. But then I looked and I said, because I'm not white, but I'm like, God, like sometimes I feel like that guy. Do you know what I mean? But if I ruled the world, and this is why I'm trying not to say this for all black people, but I'm saying when that came out, man, for people around the way, that made a big difference. That kind of song was talking about, you know, what would it be like if we didn't have to live like this. So
yeah,
anyway, sounding just like that white guy who loves, you know, everything about moving on to the final episode though.
Yes.
Which has to be one of my favorite endings to a season, I think, ever.
Interesting. I didn't have a super strong reaction to it. I thought it was funny, and I can see what you're saying.
I'll give it the last, just like a BBC. BBC, you guys love to spend your entire budget in the last 10 minutes of the show. That's why I always end up liking your last episodes. His Dark Materials, I'd watch Line of Duties the same way. This, like, and I don't think they blew the budget in the last 10 minutes, but this, he does the unexpected. He does what has to happen in the story, but I didn't think he'd ever do it in the last like 5 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
Definitely taking me to a point where I want to see season 3 now.
Yeah.
I want to see what have you learned now, Earn?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But let's talk about it a bit. So it starts out with they're all going to...
The parent-teacher conference.
Parent-teacher conference. But no, sorry. But Earn and Alfred are afterwards going to go off to...
To Europe.
Europe, right? Yeah. And we have the inkling, if I remember correctly, that he's about to fire Earn.
Yes. It's kind of been building from North of the Border episode. Like... I think even Earn asks Darius in this episode, is Al going to fire me?
Right. And the funny thing is we've learned about how Earn has changed his mentality on whether he's getting fired or not, actually from the FUBU episode. Because, you know, Earn is a couple months or weeks, I guess it's weeks because his face is still busted up, weeks down the line from this happening, but he has a different mentality. And you can tell he's afraid, you know what I mean? He understands that he did screw up. Like, he doesn't understand why he screwed up, but he realizes he didn't need to make excuses. It should have just been dealt with because he's the manager. So that's all like going on in the beginning. But I don't think he yet knows. Like, I think it's like the kind of thing, like, are you sure he's gonna fire me?
Yeah, it's the kind of, you feel that it's the logical kind of thing that's gonna happen, right? This is where the story's going. But there's this gun that like they got from the first episode in the season, I think, the alligator man from
when everybody's robbing everybody.
Cat Williams.
Yeah, everybody's robbing it. Robin Banks and whatever it was from the first one. Fucking great episode.
Cat Williams, who I absolutely adore. I was so happy to see him in this show. But he finds this gun, and Al finds it, and he basically tells Earn to get rid of it.
Yeah, he says, you're my manager, get rid of the fucking gun.
He grabs it and he puts it in his bag. And this is a very much a, like, Earn is running around and he's trying to organize things and he's trying to make sure that Darius has his passport because his passport's expired. You know, they're moving their stuff either into storage or something, so they've got movers over.
When that's the B story. The passport B story I love because he managed to say so many things about the weird way things work for people that aren't the right color skin. Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and how that's exploited by people who are the right color skin. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it just was... And not necessarily exploited, because that was the thing. He took a really gentle tone with it, I think, when he put them, you know, the Hasidic place. And it was like, well, we do it for you. You know what I mean? Yeah. We'll do it for you when no one else will.
Yeah, yeah.
And we charge a fortune for it, you know? And he's like, oh, we get a lot of rappers in here.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, there's the formal part of it, and then there's the, what I would say, like the not the informal part of it, but the more wild part of it, that you're not quite sure what's going on. There's the discussion about the gun. Hmm. There's this, you know, they have conversations on the couch, and Ern is constantly pushing Al to say, like, what are you going to do? Don't tell me later, tell me now.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clear that Al hasn't necessarily made up his mind yet.
You know? Yeah, he's quite cagey, and he's not being very nice to Ern. He's, like, treating him a bit like he's fucking up a lot.
Yeah.
And which I think is great because it builds the tension to the last scene that you're talking about. But I just really want to quickly want to talk about the parent teacher conference where the teacher, who's so sweet and lovely, like she's the picture of like a kindergarten teacher that you would imagine, but she's basically encouraging Ern and Van to send their daughter to a private school because she's very advanced and, you know, she thinks she would benefit from it. And they're like, well, no, you know, we can't really afford that. Couldn't we do something and keep her here? She's like, no, this school is terrible.
Well, it's an interesting thing because he's pointing out, and this is something I always tell people about where I come from in Cincinnati, because it's the exact same way there. Like, this is a really big problem in most American school systems, like poverty lines, and it's not even poverty lines, guys. Like, I say it like that. I'm not talking about what you in your mind think of someone as poor, but public schools in America generally let down their kids. Like, that's not because they've got bad teachers. It's just usually they're underfunded and, you know, overbooked. And I know we make the same arguments here in England, but it is, you know, just worse.
Mm.
Because what happens in America is that you have a split system. And so you either have parents that can't afford to send you to private schools, and so you make your way. Some people do well. Some people fall right through the cracks at a public school. Or you get to go to these nice private schools that have a much better standard of education where you're going to be on track then to get off to college. And he was just pointing out the way that works when your skin, again, is not the right color. Do you know what I mean? One of the only places I know in Cincinnati that the public schools have top rating is in wealthy neighborhoods where the entire population, at least 99% of the population, is white. If you went to the inner city of Cincinnati, you know, all of those schools have the lowest ratings possible. And so that was the teacher just trying to be blunt. And I feel like Donald Glover did a really good job of getting those things in at those times, right? Because it's another way of him trying to add commentary without overloading you with it.
Hmm.
In other words, he could have just had a whole episode on that or a whole scene on that. But really, it's just this quick blip on, this is also the shit I have to deal with in my life, that my daughter needs private education because in America, you can't fucking send her to a good school.
It's done so elegantly. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm such a huge fan of The West Wing and I'm rewatching it again now, right? Aaron Sorkin is one of the best writers.
But that's a really good comparison, yeah.
But they would take like a whole episode and try and kind of force it down.
Yeah, I try to think of it this way, man, because I grew up in a community. Maybe this is why I like this story. I grew up in a community full of white people who would not understand the way The West Wing does it.
Hmm.
Okay, they don't want it forced down their throats. Right. They don't think they've done a bad thing to everybody, and they haven't. You know, they're not people that have ever. Most of these guys, even if they have racist beliefs, have never done a racist thing to anybody. Anyway, it's just what they've been taught to believe. You know, it's just how they think the world works. Mm. However, when you present them with that scenario and you say, how is that fair?
Right.
Look what happened to this guy. He's got no money and his daughter's brilliant. But because of that, he can't send her to private school and she's going to do that. Will, I'm not saying every time, but that will have a bigger, better impact.
Yeah, 100%.
To kind of explain. Because a lot of them will be poor and know exactly how that is. And be like, shit, man, I remember that. We tried
and
to
you
get...
You don't need, like, you know, wealthy, like, lefties telling you things, you know.
It's funny. I had this friend in Korea, this guy named Ian, who used to live in Mississippi, right? And we used to talk about race. And he said, you know, I know people think Mississippi is one of the most racist place in the world, but when you're poor in Mississippi, they're not. Mm. And I'm like, well, what do you mean, man? And he's like, man, poor people are poor people. Mm. And he's like, and in Mississippi, a lot of people are poor. Mm. And it don't matter if you're white, black, or whatever. They said they all have to congregate together because the same shit happens to everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's why I think sometimes you can take that class struggle to show this is kind of what we're talking about. You know, like, white privilege is still a thing, but I think, especially when you're talking about class struggle, you have to kind of throw away a little bit of that discussion to make sure that you're not throwing away the audience. Because, you know, poor guys in the Midwest, no offense, even if they do have white privilege, which, you know, everyone would say they do, don't feel it. You know what I mean? They don't feel like they're privileged with anything. They feel like everybody makes fun of them and that they're rednecks, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. That's not just me saying that because I read it in a newspaper. That's growing up with people that would tell you that to your face. So it's like, that's what he's trying to show here, is saying, like, I'm going to show you why things are fucked up. You know what I mean? This is where I'm going through. And again, he does it again, both with that story and then again with the, what was the other example that we had from this episode? Rambling and lost my train of thought with it. So, but there are numerous examples of him showing you kind of where it is, rather than, as you said, West Wing style, like having the dialogue about it and saying, well, this isn't right because these people are, or watching the documentary on it. You know what I mean? Like, that is unfortunately,
it's a different impact.
It's unfortunately these days our preferred way of trying to get those messages across. And that's why I'm always trying to say, maybe not. Like, maybe tell it in your story. Tell them a story that they'll understand rather than trying to put it on a billboard, you know?
I hear that. But yeah, so then we reach the airport and security at the airport.
Right, right. And so in the last pretty much 10 minutes of this thing, 5 minutes of this thing, Earn does something. I mean, that's the thing. This is the whole point. Is it bad? Is it good? But he takes the gun he has and he puts it in his, I mean, I say friend, I'm doing quotes right now because this is the whole point. He's got these guys like he came up with in the agency with.
Right.
And they've never helped him. In fact, we're pretty sure they're stealing Paperboy off the back of
him. That's his fear.
That's his fear. So
Because there's even like a little conversation between
Lucas
and Lucas Paperboy. Lucas keeps
taking him aside and saying, I can do this for you, I can do that for you. Like that. And Paperboy is definitely, Alfred is definitely leaning that's what he wants. That he's tired
and this
of.
Is where the gun comes back into play.
So he takes the gun and you don't see it. Like, that's what I love is you don't see it at the time.
I mean, you see him open his bag. At the x-ray, you know, at the point.
Yeah, and look at the gun, and it was like.
And he opens it, and he sees the gun. And it's like, oh, no. Now, what happens next? I'll be honest, I was a little bit confused.
That's right, because they time play on this one. Sorry, I'm skipping that, aren't they? Time play, because then you're on the plane with him and Alfred.
Yeah.
And so then there's this great conversation, the cathartic dialogue.
Yeah.
So this is when they do a West Wing, and they're like, we're going to tell you that Earn in Alfred's mind has learned what he needs to about no one's going to give a shit about how they are. And unfortunately, like, that's the truth statement of the whole thing. That's what Earn's trying to show, is he had to work harder at what he did because no one ever gave him a break. And that's the whole point.
And he also talks about their relationship, you know, that kind of bond, family bond that they've got, and how important that is for Alfred.
To look out for each other.
Yeah.
And it's just because no one else will.
And I think that's where FUBU kind of comes back in. You see that, like...
Right, because Alfred is basically saying, you're tripping. If you ever think I would drop you on your ass and leave you on your own, you're my blood, but I need you. And this is where he's going back to that last episode saying, I need you to be better than you were there. Because you're supposed to look out for me as well, and you didn't. You know what I mean? You let things happen.
But he definitely is, like, not angry with Earn for... planting the gun in someone else's
No, because this all plays out while they're talking,
right?
And so, and then we finally get the last scene where it's like shows what he does, but I think.
Now, like, this was my confusion, because I at first it seemed obvious that Paperboy knew what he'd done. He wasn't angry about it. He was like saying to him, okay, this is us. We're gonna be together. We gotta work together. This is our family bond and stuff. But then... the other guy, Clark, who's another performer, I think.
Yeah.
He walks up the aisle and he says, oh, yeah, Lucas, who's his manager, who's the one who's maybe been, like, trying to steal Paperboy away.
So, I think that's dramatic irony. I think we know what Earn has done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Alfred does. I think Alfred then becomes even more impressed to say, ah, Because Alfred will know damn well what Lucas was trying to do. Mm. And he'll probably be, you know, this is where you have to fill in the gaps. So, probably pissed at Ern for not sticking up for himself.
Right. But this is where I was confused, because apparently, and I didn't quite, I could be wrong, correct me if I am wrong, but I think that Ern turns around and says, I put the gun in his bag, in Clark's bag, and he put it in Lucas's bag.
Oh, and I didn't catch that. No, I didn't catch that.
I don't know if, like...
That could be that. I'm going to rewatch it now to see. But
it was a little bit confusing, because it was still an oh fuck moment, but then there was like another slight twist, I thought. Again, because I wasn't sure if Alfred actually knew what
that would make it completely different. Because I thought it was that Ern is finally learning that he has to be really ruthless.
Ruthless and stuff. Yeah.
And so he's going to take out his competition.
Right.
But if it was really more that he takes out the guy that's pissing off Alfred, because no one likes Clark. Like, that's the whole point. Is Clark is the company man that everybody fucking hates, because all he does is kiss those guys' ass all the time. And Paperboy's like, why are you doing that?
I mean,
you don't have to kiss anyone's ass. You're the rapper. You haven't watched Justin Bieber. That's the other one that's really funny.
No.
They have an entire... It's not Justin Bieber. It's not the actual Justin Bieber. But they like... I think it's episode 4 of season 1. But they have a character called Justin Bieber. And everyone loves this guy. And no one can figure out why.
I think I do remember that episode.
It's just a joke on it. But it's another brilliant... And we would have... Had we had more time, we would have talked about that. Because that's the kind of showcasing of ridiculous things. So we'll have to go back. Oh, we end on a cliffhanger then. Not like this one did. Is whether it was... If it was Clark, then it's... Ern at least doing something and doing what he's told, and that kind of solidifies the relationship with Alfred, because that's all Alfred's asking for, is saying that's your job,
look out for me.
And again, like, I guess it resounded with me because you learn a lot about that as a junior in any job, you know what I mean? When I was coming up as a lawyer, this is the kind of thing they used to teach us, not in the same way obviously, and God, this is like the posh boy trying to talk about it, but you know, you have to get things done. Like, the biggest problem you have training people in my line of work is getting to explain to them that I don't care about the excuses. And I'm not trying to sound like a dick when I say that. It's just an excuse is not something that's going to fix the problem.
Right.
And somebody's got to fix the problem.
Right.
So that's all that's going on there. If it's just that, then I think, okay, then fix the problem, be the manager, a lighter message. I thought it was cutthroater and being like, you finally learn that because of where you come from, you're going to have to fight a bit harder than everybody else. But we will see. I will go back in the next episode when we're with Mitch, actually. We'll revisit, you know, that last couple seconds of it. But there's our take on Atlanta, a long take, because we really enjoyed it, and I wanted to set out at least some of the moments in that series. And it's a quick series you can watch. I said every episode's like 30 minutes.
It's very bingeable.
Yeah.
It's very bingeable.
I said 30-minute episodes, only 11 or 12 episodes per season. So you're talking 5, 10
minutes. 10 in the first, 11 in the second.
So that's 10 hours. You can get through the whole thing. I know that sounds, if you're not consuming media like I am, maybe that's a bit much.
but it's not like a crazy, it's not fucking, you know, what you're watching, Line of Duty. Jesus Christ. 9 seasons.
Six seasons. Oh, okay. And that's not too bad. That has gotten gradually better. Wow. Like, yeah, we could do a whole nother one on my love affair. Because I got a love affair because I hate it sometimes, that show. And other times
love-hate affair.
Yeah, with Line of Duty. But we just finished season 3, moved on to season 4. So it's one of those shows that I keep telling my wife I hate it, and then we'll watch another episode. So tells you that's good writing. Yeah. But yeah, that brings us to the end. I said next week we'll have Mitch and be talking about what happened at Fright Fest. For those of you listening that will be there, I look forward to seeing you all. Please hit me up either on Facebook Messenger or whatever, and we can get a coffee or food or whatever. Just I'll be around with my usual crazy self. Ed will be there as well, probably hanging out in the bar.
That's right.
So, you know, just let us know, man. All right, until next time, everyone, thank you for listening to our rant on Atlanta. I just had to do a shout out. Donald Glover, you are the man. If you ever want to work together, give us a call. All right, man, talk to you guys later.
Bye.